Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny Lurie, your host, and so happy to be with you and bring you your team every day. Today was a really kind of fun one for the Warriors. They ended up winning the game 127-121 against the Raptors. It wasn't really nip and tuck the whole way, but it was close enough at moments that it was exciting and everything like that. And so to talk with me about it is Tim Bontemps of the Washington Post. I really enjoyed his perspective on the whole thing, and also excited to announce this is the first episode with a new sponsor of Locked On Warriors, Mack Weldon. And Mack Weldon is a really kind of high-end apparel company. They do underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts. I've been really impressed with the stuff that I've gotten from them. I really did put it through the paces and have been impressed. You can go to mackweldon.com, M-A-C-K-W-E-L-D-O-N, and using the promo code L-O-W, you get 20% off. And conversation with Mr. Bontemps runs about 31 minutes. I hope you really enjoy it. Thanks so much for coming on.
Of course, man. Happy to do it, especially on the big Twitter show day.
It is a big day, and it was fun to kind of watch the game and have that experience, internalize that, then watch a whole different game and then think about the Warriors again. But this was a legitimately fascinating game, and I'll start it with an open question to you. What was your biggest takeaway from this?
It's kind of something that I've been saying on repeat for a while, which is I really just don't think the Warriors are going to give a crap about most of these games, other than brief stretches. I mean, how many times have we already said this season that the Warriors look disengaged for a chunk of the game, like they did in the first quarter when they gave up 38 points, and then they look engaged in the second quarter when they give up 15 points, and then they, you know, they let DeMar DeRozan go on a mini run at the end of the third to make it competitive again, and then they blow the game out again. Like, I just kind of feel like they're going to go through the motions most of these games, except for certain opponents that get them up, like the Thunder, maybe like the Clippers, maybe the Cavs. But we even saw, like, tonight, they kind of went through the motions. Got the team, that's a really good Toronto team on the second half of back-to-back. Opening night, they get blown out by the Spurs in a game you'd think they'd really be up for. Like, I just really wonder, it's not really a commentary either way. I just really wonder how often we're really going to see this team lock in for 48 minutes and play. Because so far, I don't know if we've really seen it happen once yet.
We haven't. We've seen some nice periods of time. They had a really dominant stretch against Oklahoma City. They had that big, big kick against the Blazers. And a lot of that has been more offense than defense. But really, those points have been when the offense and defense kicked in together. The way that I've been thinking about this, which is along the same lines, is the idea of just enough. Like, I don't think they want to lose, but I feel like they aren't that focused on winning that they want to seal it away. You know, just end the game. That was true also of the Pelicans game at Oracle, the Mavericks game, where both those they had in hand, but just kind of took their foot off the gas pedal, and the other team is prideful. Kerr's talked about the perils of a big halftime lead. And so, you know, in this game, they didn't have it at the beginning, and then they did just enough in the second and third quarters to hold on. And then the other part of that is, you know, that in this game, they had to deal with, let's call it, a little bit of adversity. Draymond Green tweaked his ankle. Steph Curry did what I at first thought was an ankle. Now I think I've heard some things that it was banging knees. And, you know, that certainly limits them because both those players are exceedingly important, but they got enough to win anyway.
Yeah, you know, that's definitely true. I mean, having both of those guys miss a little time didn't help. And yeah, I think you're right. You go back and look, you know, both Phoenix games were games that were way closer than they should have been. Both Pelicans games are way closer than they should have been. You know, they just haven't looked, you know, they haven't had one game where from start to finish you said, wow, this team looks like the team we thought it could be. You know, they've had stretches in a lot of games where they've looked like that, but they just haven't looked that locked in. And I think personally, I underestimated how bored this team was going to be after the way last year ended and the way last year went, because I thought the addition of Kevin Durant would lead to kind of a new sense of energy for the regular season. The way that them being doubted all last summer led to them coming out of the gate strong last year. I think what we've seen is that the Cavaliers, other than today when Cleveland sat LeBron and basically punted the game in Indy after beating Toronto last night, Cleveland has looked like the team, like the Warriors last year, that is out with a point to prove after being doubted all summer and told they got a championship they didn't deserve to win. And I think we've seen, you know, it's only been 11 games, but I think it's pretty evident that even though the Warriors are 9-2, they look like a team that doesn't have that same kind of motivation they did the last 2 years in the regular season.
LeBron's ability to just flip the switch during that, you know, basically during the conference finals last year against the same Raptors and then carry that into the finals, that had a lot of resonance for me personally, like as somebody who follows and covers the NBA. And I think it was the same for the Warriors, because the other part of this whole thing is that they learned, if they didn't know it already, that this team's entire legacy is defined by whether they win a championship or not. And so what they've done is they've taken that energy and focus that was devoted to proving all the doubters wrong and just said, okay, let's hold it for now. And it's not only the players are a big part of it, but the Warriors, we talked about this a little bit on the Twitter show tonight, they're basically one of the only teams in the league that can afford to just hold back their best lineups because they don't need it. And that's such a strange concept when you think about, even though it's a long season and everything like that, that the Warriors can pull that off.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. One of my good friends, Brian Windhorst from ESPN, he likes to call, he called the game Sunday, the Suns game, a margin of error game. That's one of his favorite phrases. And it's the same point basically that you just brought up, which is that Golden State's margin of error is so much bigger than everyone else's that, to your point, they don't have to really ever play the death lineup, right? They can play it a few minutes a game, and it's usually enough for them to win, even though, you know, most teams you go, well, you have to play your best lineup most of the game if you're going to win. Golden State can do it for, you know, 6, 8, 10, 12 minutes tops, and they can usually have enough to win. And, you know, that is part of what makes this team very unique. And, you know, we'll probably get to this eventually. People are freaking out about Golden State ranking 24th in defense or 23rd. I don't remember exactly what the number is per NBA.com per 100 possession stats at this point. You know, the fact is they were a point worse after this game, and before the game they were 14th. So there's a lot of noise there. But what I was going to say as a point to that is you look at the Warriors and they're 9-2 and they're 24th in defense. Well, why is that? Because they have an insane offense that they could just kind of cruise to 110, 120 points a night. And even if they're not putting in maximum effort, they're so efficient at that end and have so much overwhelming talent at that end that they can score that many points and win, even if they are at 70, 75% and not really trying to throttle it up more than that.
I'm going to throw out a couple of stats. They're things that you probably know in your heart, but just to throw them out there to make sure that we have it. So a thing that I've been really into this year is that on NBA.com, you can do, I think it's called the on-off court comparison, but what you do is with two players, and I'm not really sure this is how they intended it, but it's exactly how I use it constantly. And so what I do is I take Draymond Green, and then I do his minutes with and without Zaza Pachulia, because you can only do it one player and one player. And so that's a relatively good proxy for the starters versus the death lineup or things like that, you know, death variants. And when Pachulia is on the floor, so basically the starters, the Warriors are actually getting outscored. They're minus 2.8 after tonight's game. So that's 107 offense, 110 defense. When Pachulia's not on the floor, so basically when it's the death lineup or a few little JaVale Looney moments, their offense goes from 107 to 121.6, and the defense goes from 110 to 100. So it goes from a slight negative to plus 21. And so why I'm not concerned in that way about the Warriors is because this isn't a circumstance for the most part, and there is a little bit of an exception to this, where there's like a gap between the coaching staff and us. You know, I firmly believe that the coaching staff knows what the best lineups for this team are. It's just that they don't have to use it all the time, and they know that there's a specific downside to it, so they just roll with it.
Yeah, this is why people keep asking me, whether it's in radio interviews or on podcasts, you know, do the Warriors have a problem with Zaza Pachulia at center? Do they have to do something? Do they have to change the lineup? And the answer to all these questions is no. They don't have to do anything. And, you know, they fully understand that. This goes back to the same thing we were just talking about how they're basically coasting through the season, right? They're not concerned about whether their starting lineup has a negative point differential. Like, it just doesn't matter to them. What they need to do is to manage to get through the next 6 months with as little wear and tear as possible on their guys. And a large part of that is by having guys like Zaza Pachulia and David West, that, you know, JaVale and Kevon Looney, all these guys that they could throw out there for a few minutes to just take up time at center, so they're not playing Draymond Green there. If there ever comes a point where they're in a do-or-die situation, they're going to do what they did last year, and they're going to play Draymond Green a ton of minutes at center. But until then, and, you know, it's probably going to be a while until that kind of situation comes up, the Warriors are going to do everything they can to try to limit the wear and tear on him, which means playing guys like Zaza a ton of minutes, and they're not going to be overly concerned about the results, because the bigger picture is to have these guys as healthy as possible when the real games start, you know, 5-6 months from now.
Yeah, it's an absolutely ridiculous luxury that they can do this, and I'm sure it's incredibly frustrating to a lot of different people, both in our persuasion and in the fan persuasion, because you don't get to see that, and, you know, the regular season is long enough as it is, but if you think about the whole thing as being a drum roll, that's an even more frustrating way to see this, but that's kind of the way we're going to have to approach this. And I do want to give the Raptors credit for fighting hard even when the Warriors had that big lead. Granted, they have a fair amount of precedent of teams coming back on the Warriors, but Toronto certainly does deserve credit for that and for just pulling out a great first quarter in this game after playing the night before that tough loss against the Cavs.
Yeah, it's a very tough situation for the Raptors having to go back-to-back, obviously, against Golden State and Cleveland. But, you know, that's a proud organization. They made the Eastern Conference Finals last year. I think they're going to win, you know, well over 50 games again this year and probably finish second in the West or in the East. And, you know, they clearly wanted to try to get one of these games. And, you know, full credit to them for trying to make it interesting. But at the end of the day, they just didn't have enough juice to get over the finish line, you know, which is why you saw, I think, Golden State more than anything be able to pull away over the final few minutes.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, but I want to take a quick second to tell people about Mack Weldon. They are a new sponsor of Locked On Warriors, and I'm really happy about it. But part of what makes me so excited is that when I have a new sponsor, especially a company like Mack Weldon that I knew about but I hadn't experienced in person, one of the most important things for me to do is to really put them through the paces. And so for Mack Weldon, it's really high quality underwear, socks, shirts, and undershirts, and sweatpants. And so what I did was, you know, I was lucky enough to try out some of their stuff, and I really did put it through the ringer. I used it to work out. I used it to do kind of like high stress things. I was actually wearing some of their stuff for the Twitter NBA show tonight, and I've been incredibly impressed with how well it has gone through. It's really passed everything with flying colors. They focus on smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping. Using their website was great. You know, it was going through a lot of different options in terms of, you know, style of clothing, colors, and everything like that. And then to get it and to have it work so well is great. They have a line, I got a couple of things from it, of the Silver Series, which is naturally antimicrobial, which is incredibly cool that they do that. And it's great because it looks good, but it works really well. And if you don't like your first pair, that you can keep it and they'll still refund you, no questions asked. I'm not going to be needing that because I'm super happy with it. And one of my favorite things about something like this is it can work for both of us, because you go to MackWeldon.com, and if you use the promo code LOW, meaning Locked On Warriors, you get 20% off. So again, you go to MackWeldon.com, you get 20% off using LOW. So I think one of the other things we have to talk about with this game is the, you know, how dependent to a degree this team still is on Stephen Curry, because they had this strange dynamic towards the end of the game where, you know, if it was bang knees with Siakam, and Curry still wanted to be out there. It's hard for Kerr to tell him no, especially when he can physically be there. But Steph didn't look like himself. He's still taking those shots. And a part of the reason why the Raptors got back into this game, though the win expectancy still never got that good, was because Curry still has the confidence to take the shots that he did, but he wasn't all the way there. And there was this kind of uncomfortable parallel for me to moments during the playoffs when he came back after the MCL strain.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's kind of the fine line that we're walking here, right? When it comes to the Warriors, and that's part of where the hesitancy, I think, for them to really care about the regular season comes from. It's going back to when Steph slipped on the water spot in Houston, and just that he was never the same after that, obviously, after, you know, messing up his MCL. And
You know, I think, you know, that whenever he steps wrong between now and April, that everybody's going to have their heart in their throat if they're a Warrior fan, right? And it's going to be this constant tug of war between, do we sit him out and keep him rested, or do we listen to Steph and let him play? You know, I mean, that's kind of what the ongoing fight is going to be.
It really is that simple. If you want to think about it, another guy that I want to talk about, because he had, especially it was in some ways a definitive fourth quarter, was Patrick McCaw. McCaw had a huge third quarter in their last game against the Suns, and, you know, had those moments. I said that he solidified his rotation spot. And in this game, he proved something very different to me, which was that he can be a part of lineups as the fifth best player, like with the starters, and do a good job.
Yeah, he's continued to impress, you know, and it's a nice, it's a very nice find for the Warriors, you know, given some of their roster construction situations going forward. It's a pretty important development that he can not only play, but be somebody that looks like he could really be a contributor both now and moving forward for him.
And it's important to note that, you know, he's at this point in his career, especially, he's not going to be, you know, the best player on the floor. He's not going to be that, you know, I don't see the, you know, the next Stephen Curry or Klay Thompson in him. But you need players who know what to do when they're on the floor, who don't make many mistakes, and can also take advantage of the opportunities that are created for them. In many ways, that is the best thing that Harrison Barnes did, except during the last three games of the NBA Finals for the Warriors, was the idea of doing the best you can with the role that you are given. And the Warriors don't really have a ton of those guys this year. It's one of those changes that happen. Iguodala is, you know, he tries to fit into whatever role they need. If his jump shot gets all the way back, that's certainly something he can do. But if McCaw can fill that role, he certainly seems more able to do that niche than Ian Clark, because Clark kind of plays his own game.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think I've kind of thought for a while, I think the best case scenario for Pat McCaw is that it becomes Avery Bradley, which I don't know if he'll become that good, because Avery Bradley's an elite 3-and-D guy who can guard ones and twos. But, you know, ideally he's a guy who, he doesn't ever look like he's going to be much of a guy who can do anything off the dribble. But if you can be a guy who can guard ones and twos and hit an open three consistently, that's a player that every team in the NBA is desperate to find these days. So if he can grow into that role and really solidify himself in that between now and April, then the Warriors found themselves a hell of a second round pick. And, you know, going forward, that can really influence how they make some decisions next summer about what they do with their money and their team.
There is certainly a chance that he can get better dribbling. The guy who I think of for that is Kawhi. You know, Kawhi's gotten so much better there. And I'm not going to say Patrick McCaw's going to do that, but it's just that there is a precedent. Klay Thompson's also gotten so much better off the dribble. But the threshold test...
That's kind of like when people have always said that, like, when a guy comes to the NBA with a broken jump shot, and they say, well, Kawhi's learned how to shoot threes, and Jason Kidd's learned how to shoot threes. Like, well, yeah, Jason Kidd and Kawhi Leonard are Hall of Famers, and Klay Thompson's a Hall of Famer. So, and I'm not saying that I don't mean that you're saying that he can follow those guys. I mean, you said it before, I'm just kind of bringing it up as from a lot of times fans will say stuff like, well, this guy just has to learn how to shoot threes. And if all I'm bringing it up for to say is that if it was as easy as somebody just being able to do it, there is a reason why it would only be so these very few guys who've been able to make those kinds of leaps in their games over time.
Now, Tim, I take all criticism as a personal attack, so I'm deeply offended. But it is a very important thing. And sometimes we gloss over how hard it is to get that much better. And the Warriors are actually a good example of this, just because Curry and Draymond, to a degree, kind of spoiled a lot of the other guys on this team, because they got so much better in a relatively short period of time, that, you know, when you're sitting there watching Harrison Barnes sometimes with Festus and just going, well, why aren't these guys getting better by as much? And like, oh yeah, because Curry and Draymond are the anomalies. Like, that doesn't happen very often. But what I was getting at with McCaw is that the real threshold test, and if anybody ever wanted to ever make a Locked On Warriors drinking game, this could be something you could use for basically any podcast I'm on, is if he can, one, force the closeouts. That means you have to be good enough at shooting threes that the other team is going to freak out if you're open. The second part is that if that happens, to recognize it, do two dribbles and a good decision. And so sometimes that good decision is going to be a pull-up mid-ranger. Sometimes it's a pass. Sometimes it's knowing that there's nothing to actually just basically reboot the conversation. All of those things are potentially positive things. And if McCaw can reach that point, which is basically what Harrison Barnes got close to but never really did, and now he's getting closer as a Mav. If he can reach that point, then you can play him in kind of the Iguodala role, and Andre actually kind of joked a little bit about that after the game.
Yeah, I mean, that's something. I think you're 100% right, and it's something, like I said before, we have to watch over the next few months, because, you know, both Livingston and Iguodala are free agents next summer, and depending on how much money Kevin Durant's willing to take, you know, the Warriors may or may not have the opportunity to keep those guys. And so, you know, if McCaw can establish himself as a legitimate rotation player long term, you know, all of a sudden that gives Bob Myers and the rest of the front office a lot more options in terms of trying to fill out the rest of their roster.
Something I would really like to see more over the next 2 months, so, you know, before things really get decided, is a lineup where Durant is playing the three, and then McCaw and Ian Clark are the one and the two in whatever affiliation you want. And the reason why I want to see that is if they have enough shot creation to work, because that's sort of your beta test for how important Sean Livingston is moving forward. He has a big value just by being the injury rest replacement for Steph Curry, but if McCaw and Clark can kind of survive that, you can look for something a little bit different if, let's say, Livingston, for whatever reason, just demands a ton of money, or somebody else makes an irresponsible offer. And those are the types of things that can happen when you have a successful team. Like, I was thinking about, you know, Carl Landry. Carl Landry got offered way too much money. I'm guessing the Warriors would have been happy to bring him back. But you have to have a contingency plan for when that happens. And really, at a fundamental level, that's kind of what Kevon Looney and Patrick McCaw, their near-term best-case scenario is that they are that contingency plan.
Right, and I think probably not for this year, but more for next year, Damian Jones factors into that too, right?
Sure.
Like, those are all guys that if one or two or three of them, you know, it looks like McCaw at least will, even though it's early. If one or two or three of those guys look like they could be rotation players a year from now, then it really does fundamentally change, you know, a lot of the decisions that the Warriors have to make, and makes, you know, their life a lot easier, and they can have the flexibility to do a lot of different things that they maybe can't now. And that, you know, that really is something to bear watching over the next few months. I would tend to think that, just based on what I know about their games now, I don't think that either Clark or McCaw is ever really going to be the kind of creator that, to your point, that to be able to really be a secondary creation option in a situation like that. But, you know, to your point, given how much of this season is going to be an experiment, it would be interesting to see those lineups up and see how it would work in terms of knowing if it is something that would work going forward or not.
Exactly. It's one of those things that the Warriors can afford to do, just like we started with this, with talking about Lindhorst's margin of error, my just enough. And you get the ability to do that in games that actually matter, because the rest of everything else is so good. And part of the reason why I wanted to see it with Durant at the three specifically, and you could do that with West or Looney at the four, and then whatever five you want, they have a whole bunch of them, and they're all pretty similar. The reason why I want to see that is because, broadly speaking, that's more of the kind of lineups that you're going to see during those, just kind of more like, you're not eating minutes, because you never have Durant out there when you're just eating minutes, but the idea of kind of treading water plus, and if that group can do it, then better personnel can too.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to put it. And look, I think it's fair to say it is treading water, even if Durant's out there, because I think the Warriors are largely just going to be treading water between now and April, because, you know, again, they just don't, I don't think we're going to see them really get up for a lot of these games. You know, I the way they did, say, for that Clipper game in the preseason, right? When they came out with a point to prove. Like, that's why I think maybe those Clipper games, maybe the next time they play the Spurs, maybe when they play the Cavs, like, there are going to be a few games that they really get up for. I think the rest of the time is probably just going to be a lot of, all right, when do we have to start playing to win today? And then checking off a box and moving on to the next game.
Yeah, certainly fair. And there's an outside possibility Boston is one of those games. They were the team that beat the Warriors at Oracle first last season. And we don't know if Boston's going to have all their guys back. There's a lot of questions with that. But kind of the last thing I wanted to talk about, And basically, it will be a question to you of whether my fixation with this is legitimate or not. So something that I've been focusing a lot on this year is that the Warriors running the stagger they have with Durant, so basically pulling him early in the first and then bringing him back, and then he's the bridge from the end of the first quarter to the beginning of the second. My feeling is that that is an unusual enough alignment that other teams' coaches should seriously consider changing up their rotations to deal with it. Is that, do you think that's more just me overthinking this, or is that something that they're good enough to actually change the way coaches coach?
You're overthinking it in the regular season. I don't think teams don't really, contrary to what fans might think, like the NBA teams scout every game, and they have scouting reports on each team they play. But they largely aren't going to change what they do game to game, depending on the opponent. There are rare cases where, like last year, you saw the Spurs in the regular season did some different stuff against the Warriors the different times they played them. Clearly, it seemed like Greg Popovich was kind of trying things out. But for the most part, teams tend to just do what they do, right? And I don't really think that's going to change much in the regular season. Now, if you're in a seven-game playoff series, will teams start to adjust rotations to match stuff like that with Durant? Yes, I think so. But I guess it's possible in certain situations that teams might react to it. But I think for the most part, especially in the regular season when guys are very comfortable in their roles and what they're doing usually, because the only time I think you'd really see a team do that is if it's a really good team they're playing. And it is kind of one of these statement games, like if they're playing the Spurs or the Clippers. And I mean, I guess Pop might do something because he's always liable to try something. But I think for the most part, teams are just going to stick with what they're already doing in the regular season. And then come playoff time, if the Warriors are really hammering them, then maybe you see them change up a rotation and try to match up better with that.
And it also is more of a regular season thing because the Warriors' rotation will look different in the playoffs. You know, especially if all those guys are going to play, let's say, 40 minutes or so, you can run things very differently in the playoffs. You know, maybe you just go, you know, Draymond at center lineups for a larger portion. You can do whatever you want in terms of Durant. And so you're right. I think that you're right. But I also, at the same point, we talked about margin for error. That might be something that the Warriors really use, because having Durant on the floor during that time, if the other teams aren't going to deal with it, they should just do well.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. And it is, you know, it's like I said earlier, when people, you know, I don't remember who it was on the internet, on Twitter, talking about how great the Warriors offense is. And, you know, it's like I said, the Warriors have built a team to outscore people, right? I mean, that's clearly how they built this team. And as we saw tonight, and we've seen all season long, that they can just pour it on whenever they have to and score a ton of points. And, you know, that's something that really, I just don't really see how that is going to change in terms of other teams being able to stop it. It's just kind of, they are kind of what they are, and they're going to roll it out there and kind of dare you to outscore them. And I just don't think, you know, other than the nights when they've just completely not shown up at home against the Spurs and in L.A., we've seen that that's a recipe for success just about every other night.
I started this with an open question. I'll end it with an open one. Is there anything else that we haven't discussed that you think warrants mentioning from this game?
I'm just still impressed with the way DeMar DeRozan is doing what he's doing. I know this isn't a Locked On Raptors podcast, but, you know, I looked at one point in the third quarter and he was 5 for 14 and had 17 points. And then about 5 minutes later, he was, I think, 7 for 17 and had 30 points, because he got to the foul line about 10 times in a row. And, you know, DeMar has his flaws. He's not a good defender. He's not an overly athletic guy laterally, which is weird because he's known for throwing down huge highlight dunks. But he's obviously not a good three-point shooter, but he's an outstanding mid-range jump shooter, and he's really become an elite guy at getting to the foul line. And, you know, he's proven that you can be a really good team, if not a championship team, and build your offense around him and your team around him. So, you know, is he going to keep up at the stretch he was to start the season? No, I think that's pretty clear. And I think we've already started to see him kind of, you know, start to slip back the other way the last couple of nights in terms of his shooting percentages. But, you know, he has proven that he can still get you buckets and get you points every night. And I think that it's been really impressive to watch.
One of the most compelling things that I've been trying to, like, put my finger on in terms of basketball is the idea of guys that are good athletes in some senses and not in others. So DeRozan is a much better vertical athlete than lateral athlete. And there are guys that go one direction or the other. I mean, I think Willie Cauley-Stein is a guy who's way better laterally than he is vertically. And so you have all these players, and so you kind of need to appreciate them at that. Like, there are guys that are good athletes and bad athletes too, but DeRozan is a particularly fascinating one because that limitation laterally explains some of what he does poorly. It's also just he doesn't care about defense enough, but he is a spectacular talent, and I'm overly critical of him because what he does well is not the type of stuff that I value, and what he does poorly is the type of stuff that I do, but I've grown to appreciate him for what he is.
Yeah, no, that, I mean, that's the thing. Like, in a league where there is so much emphasis on 3-point shooting and on the stuff that DeMar doesn't do, it's pretty impressive to see him be able to continue to have success even when he is doing all this stuff that people say is not, you shouldn't be able to be successful anymore doing it. So I do give him a lot of credit for being able to, show that you can be a really good player in the league if you're not a 3-point shooter and you're a guy who plays more like it's 1976 than 2016. I mean, I think some people make fun of DeMar for that, but, you know, even if he's not maybe quite as good as his numbers look right now, he's still a heck of a player. And it's been really fun to kind of watch, you know, especially because, you know, we watch a lot of basketball and, you know, it is kind of neat to see when teams are doing something a little different than everybody else and it's working, just because I don't like, as much as I understand the value of 3-point shooting and, you know, not necessarily posting up as much, like if there is a guy that's a really good post-up player or a guy like DeMar that's a great mid-range jump shooter like LaMarcus or Dirk or DeMar, like it's kind of fun to see something different because it does break up the monotony a little bit of just doing the same thing and seeing the same thing over and over and over again.
Agreed. And it also, it increases my kind of intrigue because you like to see, though it's obviously more of a playoff thing, how teams handle that. You know, DeRozan is an extremely unusual guy in terms of his strengths. And so some teams don't have the personnel, some teams do. Where do they do it? Like, I was watching the game yesterday when they played the Cavs, just fascinated by the Cleveland putting Richard Jefferson on him and basically just putting him on an island and just saying, deal with it. And then they started doubling in the second half. That really helped. And so you can kind of use it as an understanding mechanism or a clarifying mechanism for how the other team deals with them too.
Yeah, no, totally. It's been fun to watch, and you know, especially in a as we've talked about a few times on this pod, in an 82 game season where things tend to get boring, it is just fun to see something different. And DeMar, to his credit, has been very different and very successful this year. And I'm curious to see how long he can keep it up.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again for taking time. You're a real trooper for doing this so late.
Hey, anytime, man. I'm always happy to come on. And like I said, congrats you and Nate on doing the show. I'm excited for you both. I think it's a pretty cool thing and look forward to seeing how it develops from here.
Thanks again to Tim Bontemps for taking the time to come on, especially this late. We recorded this at like 12:30 at night, and he was game to do that, which I really appreciate because it took me a while to get home after the Twitter NBA show, which was a great experience. I'll talk a little bit about that, but get through some other business first. You can follow Tim on Twitter at Tim Bontemps, TimBontemps, and you should and must read him at the Washington Post. Does great work, covers the whole league now, and for those of you that are mostly focused on the Warriors, now that he is based out here, he is doing a lot on them, and it's great to have him out here and to have his voice and his insight into this as a national writer. I think I've mentioned that before, but it really is something that I enjoy. And yeah, this was an interesting night for me. The Twitter NBA show launched today. It's Nate Duncan and I doing halftime shows and then a post-game show after both. So tonight it was Warriors-Raptors and then Clippers-Grizzlies, which ended up being a really fun game too. And it was a great experience. Twitter has been incredibly supportive. For those of you who didn't watch it, you can certainly still check it out. You can go to periscope.tv/NateDuncanNBA, same as his Twitter handle, and it should have the videos for everything that we did today. So if you want to check it out, the halftime show of the Warriors game is all on the Warriors. And then we do a decent segment of the post-game show because we do the first game. We do the second game, which just happened first. And then we talk about Warriors-Raptors and then get into a whole bunch of other stuff, more like a Dunked On episode. So it was a blast to do that. The response has been great. I really do appreciate that. And so I feel like that's enough promo time for that. But this was a fascinating game for the Warriors. I do not know yet whether I'm going to release an episode Thursday night, Friday morning. And there's a very good reason for that. And it is because I am going to do two episodes over the weekend. I'm going to do an episode post Celtics game and post Bucks games. Already have guests lined up for that. And there is a difference of an opinion, let's say, on whether weekend podcasts are a good thing. But for me, I like being at least a one, often the one, to really put that out there. And I love doing game analysis. I'm going to be watching anyway, going to be writing for The Athletic. So why not get somebody on often who was there, but definitely someone who knows both teams very well to talk about it. So that is the current plan. If something comes up, the most obvious thing would be if we get any more further color on what's happening with Curry, then maybe I'll do something on that. And plenty of other topics have been, it's been great. People have been submitting stuff, and you can certainly do that. You can go to, probably the best way is DannyLarueNBA@gmail.com. That's my email address. And people just send me ideas like, hey, do you want to talk about this or that? And I did an email bag before. What I want to get better at is doing a mix of the two and also answering questions in the context of other stuff, you know. So let's say I did that big man episode. Maybe I could incorporate a question at the end of that or something to that effect. So that's something I'm going to work on over the course of the next, you know, weeks, let's say. And it's been an absolute blast so far. Still have a lot of ways to make this better. You can also reach out to me at Danny LaRue on Twitter, DannyLaRoux. The fundamental problem there in terms of if it's something more substantive is that there is no guarantee that I'm going to see it. My mentions, especially on a night like tonight, can get a little bit hectic. So that's why email's a little bit better, but you can use whatever makes you happy. And thank you so much to everybody for the support of this show, for the support of the Twitter NBA show and everything else that I do. And also you can support us and this show by going to macweldon.com. You getting 20% off using the promo code LOW. So I really have been impressed. I'm very conscious about the idea of the things that I endorse, the things that I, you know, that are sponsors of the show are things that I believe in. I'm a big fan of them, big fan of SeatGeek, and I've used them for years. And now with Mack Weldon, I knew the product, but I hadn't experienced it before. Now that I have, I don't think I'm going to go back to what I had before. And I'm happy that I already have a pretty good little arsenal of it at hand. And I think that's only going to grow with time. So you go to MackWeldon.com, and then LOW is the promo code, and then you get 20% off. That's a lot of good money. They make really high quality stuff. And as always, download every episode, subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review. Always huge things to do. If you ever wondered why we say it all the time, it's because it really does make a difference on this show, on anything else, but especially, let's call it a fledgling show. And we are getting close to, I don't want to necessarily call it a milestone, but there is something, and I have this rule that I don't talk about things like that until it gets there. I don't know if it's superstition or what, but we'll see when that happens. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.